15. Arthi. Arthi pushed through the crowds on Stoker Lane just before noon, feeling good about their plans. When Matteo had handed her his list of Ethereum members in his tenacious, looping scrawl, he had warned her that the task would be difficult. Ethereum members benefited from having time at their disposal. They were patient and covered their tracks, and as a result, they were careful with their dealings. Blackmailing any one of them would be an arduous endeavour. But she hadn't expected to see the name of the official in charge of public works. She didn't know he was a vampire, and she never would have pegged him as a member of the Ethereum. His name on Matteo's list had made her job infinitely easier. But tonight, she'd have a valid marker in her hand. She passed the dye shop and the tannery, then Fat Anvil's florist that wasn't a florist at all. There were folks who waved at her, some who complimented the tea they'd drunk at Spindrift, and others who made their distaste for her establishment known. At last, she reached the stretch of road beside the cemetery, where gravestones were plunked down like afterthoughts, because no one ever remembers they're going to die. Clutching her cap against a gust of wind, she stopped when something white disappeared into an alley across the street. A kitten strutting into the shadows after him. Laith. He was supposed to be meeting her at noon, not wandering through back streets. Arthi crossed over, keeping her distance. A ladder was propped up to the sawtooth roof of a building, and Laith scooped the kitten onto his shoulder before he began his ascent, swift and languid. Arthi clenched her jaw and looked ahead to the street she should take. And yet, there was something to be said about a girl who knew everything about everyone, and a boy more mysterious than the moon. Exhaling through her teeth, she started up the rungs, reaching the top as Laith made quick work of the roof's dips and rises like a phantom passing through fog. She could barely follow his lead. When she finally made it past the narrow ledge near a chimney, she stopped, clutching her hat against a gust of autumn air. Yards ahead, Laith was watching her. He wasn't even surprised to see her, and she remembered Jin's warning. "Arthi," he said, almost despicably, she thought. But she knew she was lying to herself. His voice was as soft as it had been that night in her office, and little embers raced down her skin. Here was a boy who knew his worth. The pride on his face said, but unfortunately for him, she was a girl who knew hers. She lifted her chin. "Shadowing me, hmm?" he asked. "One might think it's because you don't trust me." Oh, she didn't, but there was more to it than that. A pretty face wasn't enough to raise her interest. She needed a puzzle, an enigma, a challenge. They might have formed an alliance, but neither of them trusted the other. This wasn't merely a deal. It was a game. "You were to meet me at the Office of Public Works," she said. "Not plod around abandoned alleys. Of course I'll tell you. You'll find I don't break my promises." There was something deeper to the words, a message she couldn't fully grasp. "You will this time, because the traffic on Stoker Lane will double in about 3 minutes. The breeze ran fingers through his hair. "Not on my route." Arthi glanced at the foot traffic 4 stories below. It was a long drop, and the next building was a street's width away. This was his route? He couldn't jump that. He twirled a sprig of rosemary between his fingers. Arthi wondered if he knew that Atenians spoke with flowers when they were too prim and proper for direct conversation. He very likely did, for every corner sold a pamphlet with a list of which weed meant what and what blossom to say why. "You don't fear death." His words weren't a question, but an observation. He breathed a laugh. "Or maybe you're simply not afraid of heights." "What mattered of me died long ago," she said, and started for the drainpipe. "You and I aren't much different in that regard." He didn't elaborate, and she wasn't about to ask. Asking meant interest, and interest would suggest she cared. She didn't. You can risk a leap. I'll take the straight. Or you could let me show you how. Surprise flared in his eyes, because he hadn't expected her to turn back. In this game between them, she had scored a point in her favour. Go on then, she said, stunning him further by closing the distance between them. His throat bobbed, and she delighted as his confidence crumbled. She could see the flecks of bronze in his dusty brown eyes, matching the jewels set in the hilt of his curved dagger. She could see that his nose was a little crooked, and his hair was wavy where it had been allowed to grow out a little. Hello, criminal, he said, stepping behind her. Teach me, saint, she replied. He reached for her arms, straightening them with a gentleness she didn't expect. It unnerved her. His touch struck flint down her skin, forcing the tick, tick, tick of her watch to be as silent as a vampire's pulse. His exhale feathered the back of her neck, and then his hand slipped to either side of her ribs and fell to her waist. She heard him gulp. There was that exasperation again, vexing her, strangling her. It was as if she couldn't control how she felt, and that terrified her. She was aware of the weight of each of his fingers through her shirt, as if he was carving her with a knife. She wanted to press into him. She wanted to snarl at him. She wanted. His hand brushed her pistol. The world rushed into focus. Arthi whipped Calibor free and shoved Laith onto his back. He fell with a surprised oof, boots scrambling to gain purchase. His kitten leaped away with a startled cry. Then Arthi pressed the barrel of Calibor to his brow, and he went absolutely still. If she didn't need him to infiltrate the Aetherium, she would blow his brains into the shingles of this roof. His breathing was loud, rough. Wind ruffled the back of her jacket, warning her that she was at the edge of a four-story building in front of a boy she barely knew, a high captain of the Horned Guard she had just gotten far too comfortable with. Calm down, Kasimi. She dug the barrel farther in until it scraped bone. Don't Casimir me. He pushed back against it, voice low. I can't decide if you're trigger happy or easily intimidated. But his words tripped, his accent heavier. His veins bulged, blood gushing, roaring. Afraid, she thought, until something shot through his eyes, goading her. She shoved him flat and got to her feet. We're going to walk, she said, and started back the way she came. It was 12:30 when Arthi and Laith made it to the Office of Public Works. Laith sat beside her in one of the chairs arranged near the entrance. He hadn't spoken a word since they'd descended from the rooftop, and neither had Arthi. The silence wasn't an amiable one. They were temporary acquaintances, and once their deal was done, they'd go their separate ways. As they should. The Office of Public Works was 3 stories high, with fancy corbels and a pair of double doors inlaid with a mosaic of glass, though its beauty was overshadowed by the dilapidated building to its left. The inside was just as quaint and obnoxiously happy. The walls are bright and springy yellow. It looked as if Flick had done the decorating. A man on a ladder rifled through records on the shelves built into the far wall. A maid dusted a wide curio. The official's various certificates were pinned behind the secretary's curved desk, scraps of yellowed paper meant to signify brilliance. A clerk worked by the light, spilling from the window, a mess of papers on his desk that made Arthi absolutely certain someone was going to get an approval for the wrong project. She tipped her hat at him. The window on the uppermost story is open, Laith said tentatively, breaking the silence between them first. He stroked his cat and Arthur uselessly remembered the feel of his long fingers on either side of her ribs.
We could bypass this and hop in.
The only way to access it is through the window of that abandoned warehouse next to us, Arthur said. Not even you can scale a wall that slick.
Is that a compliment?
Laith asked with a hint of a smile. She flicked a brow at him. Don't push your luck. Besides, we're not here to steal.
Semantics, as Jin would say.
The gap above the front doors let the cold inside because the official didn't have the money required to fix it. He would if he hadn't siphoned it into his own coffers. When the last of the official's appointments left the room, Arthur rose from her seat, and Laith started to do the same. Going somewhere? She asked. He looked down at her.
I'm coming with you.
No, you're not. He opened his mouth, but she wasn't here to argue. She gave the sigil embossed on his lapel a pointed look.
You will wait, or I will cause a scene like the criminal that I am, and imagine what the office will think when you fail to arrest me.
No one has to know what will happen when I put you in handcuffs, Laith said, voice dropping low.
Liquid heat curled into her veins, flooding down her skin, making her hiss through her teeth.
You're mistaken if you think I'll let you. Sit down.
He sat, his dark eyes igniting with the same murder burning in her. At the sight of Arthur, the secretary sank into her daffodil day dress like a turtle.
Deepest apologies, miss, but official Lombard is not currently in.
Arthur gestured to the exit.
So that surly-looking woman who just left had been sitting alone in his office?
The secretary blustered, trying and failing to find an answer.
He doesn't want to see you, she admitted at last.
Oh, but unless he wants to stop seeing altogether, he will.
Heads turned to look at her, murmurs buzzing. The secretary didn't move. The orchid in her coiffed hair bobbed with her swallow. Arthur could feel Laith throwing his judgment into the ring too. Arthur lowered her chin.
Now get.
The secretary shot to her feet and hurried up the stairs, disappearing through the oak door on the third floor. She returned almost immediately and nearly toppled the pile of mail on her desk.
Official Lombard will see you now,
she said breathlessly. Her face was flushed and not in a good way.
Much obliged, Arthur said, giving Laith the final glare.
Official Lombard was a little man with a big desk and nothing on it. She didn't know how she'd missed the signs the first time she'd been here. He was pale, with eyes that bore the slightest tint of crimson, and he smelled faintly of blood, a scent she'd grown accustomed to in the bloodhouse. The flask beside him suggested he was looking forward to a good break. One of hundreds of breaks he took every day until his plan was thwarted by her. A guard stood at the door, well-built and stern-eyed. Judging by his size and street attire, Arthur was fairly certain he was for hire and not horned guard ordained.
Interesting.
He shuffled his bulk toward her.
Oh, I'll have a black tea, please. No milk, less sugar, Arthur told him. Got to save the teeth.
The guard turned red and looked ready to swing a punch. But when Arthur switched gears and produced a shiny duven with two fingers and said,
Won't be long.
He took the coin and closed the door behind him. Clayton Lombard sputtered in indignation. But he should know. Loyalty was easily bought in a country that valued profit over all else.
Lombard, Arthur inclined her head.
The wallpaper was a sickly shade of yellow that made his sickly pale skin look a tad more, well, sickly.
You're looking alive.
Jin would have laughed at that one.
Casimir,
Lombard replied, displeased. Why are you here? Arthur sat in the chair across from his desk and crossed a leg over her thigh, watching Lombard's discomfort rise as she made herself comfortable. She couldn't expect to be convincing by twiddling her thumbs at the door. It was the first requirement of any good swindle. Make yourself belong. She picked up the little brass bell from the edge of his desk and rang it.
Lambard looked distressed. I thought we were settled, the balding official said. After last time that...
Did you stop finding extra duvin in your pockets?
Arthur asked. His moustache twitched with her disrespect, but his silence was what she'd expected.
As I thought.
I need your Ethereum marker.
You cannot have it,
he blustered with unfounded indignation.
I refuse to do any such thing.
Arthur let his words echo in the silence. The four wood-panelled walls spewed his words back at him until he shrank into his curved chair.
I was more expecting you to deny being an Ethereum member, or even a vampire.
But you're as pathetic as ever. I do appreciate you saving me the time, however. So there's that. He shook his head, too embarrassed to even try saving face.
You forget Clayton Lambard, whom you speak to.
You won't even need to use what little brain you have left to give it to me.
You're a monster,
Lambard whispered. A monster would shove a barrel down your throat until you handed it over. I like to think I'm quite civilized. Arthur regarded her fingernails.
Oh, and I also don't steal, so please don't insult me.
Lambard huffed a wet sob.
You did your damage and swore you'd never return.
I'm not a plague official.
You broke your oath, and here I am. You're reckoning.
Arthur had enough to keep track of without poring over Lambard's books again and looking for figures that didn't tally. But she knew the man. She only needed a single glance at him to know he hadn't stopped skimming the funds allocated to the Office of Public Works. Bad habits work that way.
Why?
He was drowning in anguish.
Why must you do this?
We break bones and accept the consequences, official.
And that makes me better than you.
You lack culpability. That doesn't warrant an office, but a cage in a menagerie. She consulted her watch. This was taking too long.
Is it in your pocket?
He looked down at his trousers as if a scorpion had dropped into his lap.
I have every press on Stoker Lane under my thumb, and a runner on every street.
She didn't want to be a broken record threatening to expose every vampire's secret, but he was a goldmine of secrets.
Itenia loves a good story, especially when it has to do with their hard-earned money.
She didn't think it was possible for him to pale even further, but he did just that.
Your luck will run out.
Lambard began quietly, dangerously. Arthur went still.
No one is immune. No one is without secrets. And you are a loveless, soulless girl.
Arthur swallowed. She had not always been loveless. She had searched every street, every swell of the ocean's waves, and every patch of blue sky for her mother's love before she learned she would never again have it.
It is human nature to err, Casimir, and you'll find yours soon enough.
Ah, but I'm a monster, remember? Arthur held out her hand. He rose to his feet and dropped the marker in her palm. She ran her thumb along its crisp embossments before pressing the notch on its side. Sure enough, it was stamped with a numerical code.
Smart man.
It won't do you much good, because I haven't renewed my membership. Arthur held back a sigh. Of course he hadn't, but she wouldn't let her disappointment show. Lambard didn't sit back down. Arthur narrowed her eyes.
You can get back in your chair.
He ignored her, mumbling something under his breath as he exited through a second door. She started to follow him and froze when the lock turned. The doors behind her flung open. A trap. Arthur spun round, only to have the wind knocked out of her and the marker snatched from her hands. She blinked to catch her bearings, staring into the face of her assailant. It wasn't the guard for hire. This man was huge. Tall and just as stocky, clad in all black and surprisingly light on his feet.
Bloody Lambard.
Laith slipped in before the man slammed the doors closed.
With far more strength than Arthi thought he possessed in his lithe frame, he threw their assailant against the wall and extended his gauntlet blade, stopping just before impaling him through the throat. Arthi was beginning to think Harshashin sounded much like assassin.
"I'll have my marker back," she said to the man quietly, straightening her cap. "Or my friend here will get a little more friendly."
"Him?" The man barked a surprised laugh and slammed his boot on Laith's foot, breaking his hold. He shoved a knee into Laith's groin and reversed their positions, pinning him against the wall in an instant. Arthi cocked a brow. "This is what happens when you learn from a manual, saint."
"Teach me better, criminal," he said with a hiss.
This was White Roaring, where fights were dirty, and no one held out a hand unless it was for a shovel to a grave. But Laith wasn't breaking free. The man closed his hands around Laith's throat, digging nails into his flesh. Laith gasped for air. She dropped her hand to her holster, but she couldn't shoot. Calibor was no ordinary gun, and fired no ordinary bullet. She wasn't in some back alley no one would find. And the man was too tall for her to knock out with the butt of her pistol, or anything really, unless she had a club, which she didn't.
"Oh, but you do," said a whisper in her head.
She curled her fingers around her pistol's grip. Calibor was special in a way no one but Jin and Arthi truly knew. The man grunted, and Arthi saw the fight leeching out of Laith, fear blowing his pupils wide.
"You need him," she told herself.
That was why she felt a twinge of alarm when his skin began to bruise. They still had to break into the Aetherium. He couldn't die. Not yet. She pulled Calibor into her hand and ignored the world. She ignored Laith dying in front of her. She ignored her rage toward Clayton Lambard and Atenia. She thought of her mother's saris. She thought of racing through the streets with Jin, and the pleasure of a newly tailored suit. In her hands, the pistol shifted, twisted, and changed. 16. Flick. Flick wasn't fond of having work done for her, much to the dismay of her household staff. And now, hiding behind the desk and watching Jin saunter through the glass doors as if he owned the place, shoulders thrown back, one hand in the pocket of his trousers and the other swinging his umbrella, Flick wished she could do something.
"Who are you?"
It was a woman's voice. Flick's pulse thundered in her ears. Was it the same woman from the bedroom down the hall? "I might ask you the same question," Jin said coolly. Flick wondered how he could do that. If she'd been out there, she would have spotted herself to death already. "I was told to wait in the office for a Miss..." Flick held her breath. "Eleanor Thorne?" The woman finished. Her voice was low and husky. Flick thought back to the discussions with Mateo. She was the vampire sister stationed in the marker archive room, and not the doorkeeper. Flick was relieved they wouldn't have to worry about her recognizing him at the Aetherium entrance. "Don't waste this," Flick told herself. She peeked over the desk and pulled whatever loose sheets she could get her hands on, pocketing anything with that neat and pretty script, exhibiting a sense of meticulousness and certainty. "Miss Thorne," Jin smacked his lips. "See, I've been waiting far too long, and now I must make another appointment, so please inform her that I will need..." The footsteps started again, and Flick peered over the side to find the woman circling him. She was barely dressed, a silken robe slipping down one shoulder with sensual confidence. Her hair was bold black, sea-glass eyes bright in the dark, skin a rich brown. Flick had seen more and more vampires since Arthi and Jin had allowed her into their fold for this job. She was beginning to recognise their sculpted bones and ethereal features.
"Who allowed you inside?"
the vampire asked.
"Your sister, I'm guessing," Jin asked.
He was facing Flick now,
so she could see him scrutinizing the woman.
Looks a lot like you.
His gaze slowly traced down her form with a grin that quickened Flick's pulse.
Though I must say, you're far more my type.
The woman tittered and stepped even closer. She pushed a hand into his hair, and Flick thought she would combust. Surely she should look away. The vampire tilted his head back and slid the bridge of her nose along his jaw with a hum.
Jin's eyelids fluttered.
Flick touched her lighter to her scalding neck and looked away when his lips parted with a rasped exhale.
What a coincidence, the vampire cooed. Because you just so happen to be mine.
I'm only trying to decide if I should kill you here or let you run. Blood always tastes better, freshly pumped.
Flick straightened, accidentally bumping the lighter out of her hands. It tumbled slowly through the air. Her heart collapsed.
She scrambled and fell on the rug with a soft thud, catching it just before it clattered to the floorboards. The vampire stilled. Flick could have sworn her ears twitched.
Jin's mouth feathered along the woman's jaw, and this time, Flick's breath shook.
Murder is a crime, but I must say, oxygen makes everything better.
He drawled in the vampire's ear in a low murmur. His smile turned lazy, and somehow, Flick knew it was for her.
Now would be the time to jump, love.
He took off down the stairwell. The vampire hissed and shot after him. Flick's heart leaped. He couldn't outrun a vampire.
Stop thinking. Stop moving.
Shoving the lighter into her pocket, Flick stood up from behind the desk and nudged open the office doors. Downstairs, glass crashed to the floor. She winced and ran for the next room. She flung open the curtains leading to the balcony and unlatched the doors. The balcony was narrow, curved balusters giving the illusion of more space. A neatly tended garden sprawled beneath it, a little too far down for her liking.
Jump? She asked, panicked.
No one answered. She climbed over the railing, the iron slick beneath her hands, toes cramping from the inch of space.
Easy as pie. Phyllis... Flick!
She carefully crouched, gripping the spires like her life depended on it. She laughed. Her life did depend on it. One leg at a time, she lowered herself off the edge, heart between her teeth. She craned her neck to look, still too far off the ground. But what could she do now? Grow an inch or 20?
A muffled shout came from somewhere in the house, and footsteps crashed up the stairs.
Flick had no choice. She dropped, her leg twisting painfully when she hit the damp ground. She heard a door burst open, and noises spilled into the garden as she got to her feet.
Oh, wonderful,
she muttered, limping ahead. A brick wall surrounded the garden. She found footholds where chunks of the brick had broken off. Stone ground into her legs, ruining her dress as she hoisted herself to the top of it. She'd felt scandalous when she'd worn it this morning, and her hem had fallen just above her knees, trousers hugging each leg. But now she wished she was wearing a shirt like Arthie did. Something crashed. Flick nearly toppled. Jin emerged from the house, hair sticking out on end and eyes bright with mayhem. He was stunning.
Jump, Felicity!
She jumped, tumbling to the cobblestones. Seconds later, Jin landed on his feet beside her and grabbed her arm, half dragging her down the back street. Footsteps echoed behind them.
Jin?
Flick asked shakily. She didn't dare look back to see how many were on their tail.
They're following us.
A sound rang out, like rapid rain pinging a metal roof, and Jin swerved. Flick ducked.
Goodness, gunshots.
She knew guns were meant to be triggered, but she'd never heard one, much less been the target of one.
Now they're firing at us,
She could die here, and then her mother would finally know Flick wasn't in a cell.
Really, love, you ought to be a fortune teller,
Jin said, hurtling over another wall and into someone else's garden. He let go of her hand, trusting her to follow. Flick scrambled over it as another shot pinged the stone, sparks marking her sleeve. On a bench in the garden, a couple in the midst of a heated conversation leaped apart.
Pardon us, Flick exclaimed without breaking stride. We truly don't mean to intrude.
Jin laughed.
A little concern would be nice, she shouted at him.
They tumbled through a gate into the next yard and paused to catch their breath.
You know, it's quite possible to laugh and be concerned at the same time.
She met his dark eyes, noticing the smears of blood on his face, and her heart fluttered in a way she recognized.
Stop it, Flick.
He was wild and dangerous, and she should not be attracted to either.
Aren't you afraid?
She asked. Fear stops life, not death, he said, and when she looked at him in surprise, he paused, and the world seemed to pause with him. I tell myself that any time I think a fire's going to swallow me whole. Flick wondered if that had anything to do with that patch of burned skin on his arm.
You're bleeding. Oh, it's not mine. I might have shattered a blood reserve or two.
Jin pulled her up, and the air was suddenly too tense between them. Too real. She almost swooned when Jin leaned down and winked at her.
You're so sweet. Just you wait,
Flick snapped at his teasing tone. Whatever Jin had done to give them a head start was wearing out. The vampires were catching up. Her arms screamed as they hurtled over a line of hedges, and another round of shots rained down on the wall behind them. He chuckled at her yelp, and the words flew out of her.
You're going to eat a bullet, and then...
And then he threw himself in front of her and fell to the dirt with a startled hiss, blood blossoming from his side. 17. Arthi. Every so often, Arthi felt the same pinprick panic as the people whose secrets she exposed. Like now, when quick as a trick of the light, Calibor the pistol became Calibor the knife, black filigree scrawling down its hilt, silver blade sharp. Laith froze in the midst of his struggle, and for a harrowing second, she thought he might have died. But it was only a beat of surprise before he started clawing at the man's grip anew. From a knife, Calibor shifted again, this time to a sword, and then finally into what she wanted, a club. Arthi rushed at the man and swung, throwing all her weight into it. She slammed the club against his skull. The impact jarred her teeth. He released Laith with a shout and stumbled back, blinking as he looked from Arthi to her weapon. And then he collapsed. Laith gasped for air.
How? How?
Arthi holstered her pistol again. He won't be down long. We need to go. There was a tremble in her fingers, and she wasn't sure if it was because she'd revealed her secret or because the High Captain had nearly died. She towed the man before digging through his pockets for the marker. Laith rose unsteadily to his feet and hesitated. For a moment, she thought he might thank her. But then he turned away, and she was thankful. With a wheeze, he reached for the doorknob. It didn't budge. He threw his weight against it, and something rattled on the other side.
They've locked us in. Drat it all, Arthi growled.
Their assailant twitched. Laith gestured to where the curtains fluttered from the open window.
There. It's too long a drop, but we can escape through the abandoned warehouse.
But the warehouse window was closed and too far out of reach to open the latches from here.
It's not...
Laith sprinted past her, whispering to his kitten to hold fast before he leaped through the window. At this rate, she would need to spend time making sure he didn't die before they got their ledger. He landed almost soundlessly, Landed was the wrong word, because he was defying gravity. One of his hands clutched the window's ledge as the toes of his boots dug into the grooves on the stone wall. With the other hand, he worked at the latches using his gauntlet blade. A groan rose behind her.
"He's waking up," Arthi called.
"Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I had time for tea," Laith snarked.
The first latch clicked open. He turned to the second. The man huffed, and Arthi turned to find him sitting up. He shook his head and blinked at his surroundings before he fully came to, and stared straight at her. Laith shoved the window open as the man rolled onto his feet.
"Jump, Arthi!"
Laith shouted. She tucked the marker into her pocket and braced herself. The ground shook. The man was charging toward her. She ran, jumped, her eyes locked with Laith's for the barest of moments before fingers closed around the heel of her shoe, breaking her momentum. She wasn't going to make it. "When will you acknowledge that you're in way over your head? Why was the window so far out of reach?" "Reach, Arthi." Her fingers brushed the ledge. Her fist closed around air before a warm hand engulfed hers. Arthi opened her eyes. She was dangling yards above the debris piled in the alley. She wasn't a heap of bones on the ground.
"I've got you," Laith rasped.
He moved to secure her with his other hand, but she gripped the ledge and pulled herself up to the dusty wood beside him. She huffed, trying to pretend away the panic that flared in his eyes when she'd lost her footing. Laith rushed to close the window and growled.
"I can't close it. The latches are jammed," he said. "We need to move. We're 4 floors from the ground."
Their assailant was struggling to brace his own footing in the office window.
"He'll be across soon enough," Laith said.
Arthi dusted off her clothes on shaky legs. The warehouse had been long abandoned. It was oddly built. Each of the 4 levels were more balcony than full floor, though there were no railings to keep anyone from toppling, rickety and rotted stairwells connecting each one. Far below on the ground floor, tatty tables were arranged in rows, moth-eaten manuals spread beside hammers and screws the length of her hand. Giant barrels lined the left wall.
"The stairwells are all shut," Arthi said.
Laith gagged.
"That smell."
Arthi was acquainted with the rotten, smoky stench. Sulphur and charcoal. Gunpowder. Sure enough, one of the barrels was broken, and a pile of grey-black powder was strewn beneath it. It was everywhere, dusting the floorboards, trailing the corners of the upper story where they were now. Chains swayed eerily, most suspended from the ceiling, some dangling from under crates stacked along the upper floor.
"Wait," Arthi said.
Laith turned back, and she struggled to meet his eyes.
"This makes us even,"
he chuckled darkly.
"For now."
"Forever," she deadpanned.
"We'll see about that."
He glanced at the window before gesturing to a broken stairwell. It looked like a mouth that had been punched in and was now missing teeth.
"Follow me, I can lead us down."
He tucked his kitten into his robes, letting her paws and head stick out, and leaped across, glancing back every 10 seconds, as if Arthi was a child. She started after him, and nearly lost her footing again when the man jumped over in a cloud of dust, disturbing the wood beneath them. Arthi whirled to face him. He swayed, gripping the back of his head with one hand before pulling out a knife, swinging it artlessly at his side. Arthi pulled out Calibor, shifting it into a knife of her own before the man could see. He lunged first, nicking her shoulder.
"Give me the marker." "This was my best seersucker," she growled.
The man swung again, and she evaded, cuffing his chin and catching the sickening bite of his tongue. She slipped and righted herself, nearly tumbling from the narrow shelf of space. She was backed into a corner. No, trapped. Never again. The chain suspended from the ceiling drifted to her side, feet away, enticing her with an idea. It wasn't too long, falling just to the level of the floor beneath them, but it would allow her to get away from the man. "Don't even dare," came Jin's voice in her head. If she missed, she would be a pile of bones on the first floor. The wood beneath her shook again as the man trundled toward her. Waiting here was by no means safer. Arthi jumped, legs kicking air until she grabbed one of the chains, rust in the links, snaring her fingers. The musty air rushed through her limbs when she propelled herself forward. Her arc was cut short, jarring her teeth. Her attacker was gripping the chain in his hand like she weighed nothing. "Are you trying to prove a point?" she yelled as he started pulling her up. She scanned her surroundings, but the third floor was worse for wear. The stairs were shattered, and there was very little ground to stand on, and that was saying something, considering the rest of the more intact floors. She vaulted to the next chain and shimmied up, swinging onto a plank jutting out of the fourth floor. She tasted dust. No, the gunpowder. It gave her an idea.
"Get out of here, Saint!" Arthi shouted.
She couldn't see him, but knew he was waiting for her somewhere. Laith began to shout back.
"Don't finish that question," she snarled.
The man laughed at her.
"Give me the marker, and you can go home to your mother, girl."
"You'll have to send me to the sea, then," Arthi replied, shuffling her feet and gathering as much of the gunpowder together as she could. She jumped to another plank. He vaulted toward her, landing a few feet away. She slammed her leg down. The wood snapped, splinters falling to the clutter below. The man's eyes met hers, a flash of fear in the depths of his, because any moment now, they were both going to join the broken remains beneath them, or possibly fall all the way to the ground floor, breaking both their necks. Arthi darted along the narrow ledge. There was no stairwell at the end, no chain to rappel down from, only a large window coated in soot. The boulder of a man thundered after her. All this for an expired marker. "Come and get me," Arthi said. She plucked a match from her pocket and struck it on the bricks of the wall as she ran, tossing the tiny flame into the trail of gunpowder behind her. The match fell with a hiss, and the gunpowder caught fire, the hiss growing into a roar as it struck the pile she collected, quickly growing, swallowing everything around it. The wooden board beneath it crumbled, careening to the ground below, to the shattered barrel of gunpowder. The man's eyes flared in realization. He flung back, rappelling down one of the chains, and Arthi leaped, crashing through the window and hurtling through the air as shards of glass exploded into the evening light. 18. Flick. With Jin against her side, Flick cut across Arm's Place and spotted Matteo Andoni's manicured lawn and kiss-red door at last. If this job had been so woeful, she could only imagine what breaking into the Ethereum would look like. Before a couple crossing the street could get a good look at Jin, she worked the gate open, and the two of them hobbled up the walk. He was bleeding all over the cobblestones, all over her shoes, and all over his clothes. How much blood did a body have? She dumped him unceremoniously on the grass near the house's side porch.
"Oh, goodness, I'm so sorry," she rushed to say when he winced.
With a wounded look, he eased himself back against the bricks and pulled up the end of his shirt. It was soaked through, the blood nearly black.
"It looks worse than it is," Jin said, half to himself.
That didn't stop her insides from churning weakly. There was a sheen along his brow despite the chill, and Flick startled when he laughed.
"Do you find this amusing?"
she asked incredulously, shoving her hand into her pocket. A bird chirped in the jeweled trees, the harmony cut by her erratic pulse. Jin peeled back his undershirt with a hiss, and Flick averted her gaze, hearing her maid's and her mother's voices chastising in her head.
On the contrary, Jin said, just passing time until you help me stop the bleeding.
She looked about helplessly and remembered Abe's general store, 2 streets up. Abe would have something. Bandages, gauze, tape to hold it all in place. Flick didn't know much about fixing up wounds. She was dusty and spent. Her perfectly good gown tattered and grass-stained. She could feel dirt on her cheeks, her curls as wild as the streets they'd run through. She didn't have money on her either, but the old man liked a good conversation.
I'll get something from the store.
There's no time to toddle around, Felicity, he rasped. Undress me. Flick's jaw dropped.
I beg your pardon.
Please, Jin tried again tiredly. Help me rip up my shirt so that I may staunch my bleeding. Is this Mateo's house? Mustering as much self-encouragement as she could, Flick dropped beside him, rethought her life 10,000 times, and then reached for his shirt. He smiled weakly. I knew you couldn't resist. She huffed but said nothing, too concerned with the blood darkening the grass. Too diffident about touching him, undressing him. One by one, she worked the buttons free to expose the undershirt beneath.
I need scissors, she said, after attempting to rip it.
She couldn't remove it without making him move too much and risk losing more blood.
And I need a raspberry streusel drizzled in dark chocolate, Jin remarked. But since we have neither, Felicity, use your teeth.
Teeth? Oh, right. But that meant getting impossibly close to him. The alternative is letting him die, Flick chastised herself. She lowered herself to the clean edge of his shirt. She wasn't sure what compelled her to hold his gaze while she did it. She heard the unsteady draw of his breath, felt the heat of his skin graze her cheek. She gripped the fabric between her teeth and tore. His gaze bled black as he watched her, shining, delirious. This silence was going to make her explode.
Why did you do it? She asked. Do what?
He shifted with another sigh, though she felt down to the tip of her toes.
Take the bullet.
Flick straightened the edge of his shirt. It was easier to rip now, and she carefully tore off a strip long enough to cinch around him and set it aside. She shook as she peeled back the soaked end of his undershirt and cleaned away as much as she could with gentle hands. The creases of her fingers were stained in red, and she had to force a few steady breaths as her insides churned.
Is it only the blood? It barely grazed me, Jin said.
You could have easily escaped through the balcony with me. You could have easily swerved away when they fired, she said, barely listening to him. She was rambling now, and she didn't know how to stop. He was bleeding because of her. He had tried buying time because of her. She had accepted this job for her mother, and she had been prepared to do anything for her mother's forgiveness. She never thought anyone would do anything for her. But Jin had nearly died for her. I've seen you and Arthie and your ridiculous jobs, but today you seem to have left your brain in whatever empty teapot you could find at Spindrift before you sauntered over to Admiral Grove, didn't you? You were careless and witless and... He was staring at her. His gaze fell to her mouth, then to her throat, and she swallowed heavily. It was too cold for the sweat on her brow. She wrapped the fabric around him and was suddenly acutely aware of his body heat and the rise and fall of his chest. She had never been so close to a boy before. 1,000 nerve endings exploded when she knotted it tight to staunch the bleeding as best as she could, and her fingers brushed his skin. His muscles constricted at her touch, all lean and taut lines. What had you expected? He spent his nights keeping vampires in line, his days commanding the streets by Arthie's side. Jin arched his back, leaning close.
Go on, he murmured sleepily. Don't stop now, love.
Reckless, she finished quietly.
Hummingbirds fluttered against her ribcage. She wondered how delicious and warm it might be to splay her fingers over his broad chest. Did it matter? She planned to betray him. Jin, who had nearly died to save her. Jin, who believed in her when no one else did. It had seemed so simple when she was locked in her bedroom. She would do whatever it took to regain her mother's approval. But if Flick convinced a maid to let her into Lady Lyndon's office now, please, just this once, and then convinced her mother that here is the Ram's missing ledger, or even here is what the Casimirs had planned, where would she stop? Her mother would go to the press, and Arthi and Jin would lose more than Spindrift. Lady Lyndon could leave their names out of the story. She could pull some strings the way she had with Flick and the signet ring scandal. You did good today, Felicity, Jin said quietly, interrupting her thoughts. He was watching her with a gaze too perceptive, too raw, and she wondered if he saw her turmoil and indecision. The door slammed. Flick straightened.
Please do continue.
Matteo Andoni stood in the shadows of his side porch, watching them with a grin. His ivory skin was offset by the dark topcoat he'd pulled over a half-unbuttoned white shirt and black trousers. Decency was still not in his vocabulary. For the amount of exposed male skin Flick had seen this past week, one would have thought she'd gotten married. Before Flick could gasp, Jin vaulted to his feet. He shot up the stairs and shoved Matteo against the brick wall of his manor.
You lied, Andoni,
Jin rasped, teetering from the pain. His voice was lethal. All Casimir. For a moment, Matteo only squinted down at him, stunned and confused.
I don't recall doing any such thing, he replied calmly.
When he spoke, Flick caught flashes of white in his mouth that she hadn't noticed before.
You said the Thorn sisters worked at the bank, Jin hissed, scrunching Matteo's shirt in his fist,
and Flick was certain it was to keep from falling as much as it was in anger. Matteo's nostrils flared, his eyes darkening and falling to slits. He seemed at war with himself, fighting against something. He was slowly beginning to appear less like a painter, and more like a hunter.
I did, he replied, the tenor of his voice dropping a notch. His chest heaved, and he sounded almost breathless when he said, It would be wise to let go of me now, Jin.
I don't think I will,
Jin laughed, even as his blood fell onto the wooden slats in heavy drops.
I'll let you guess at where they were today, vampire.
Jin's blood. Fangs. Those were what had lengthened in Matteo's mouth. Flick knew the moment they were in danger. Matteo relaxed. His restraint disappeared. Then he hooked a leg behind Jin's and dropped him, pinning him to the porch with his weight. The vampire moved with liquid grace, a carefree sort of sprightliness. Flick could only watch as he ran a finger along Jin's cheek. No, not a finger. A claw. At home, Matteo answered softly, in a voice that sent shivers through Flick's core. She could have sworn Jin's gaze glazed with the lure of the vampire's voice.
Where most people usually are.
They were in terrible, terrible danger. A vampire like Matteo wouldn't go around using his lore on a human. Not unless he was giving in to his more animalistic impulses. Any moment now, Jin was bound to be his midday snack. Flick looked about helplessly before she picked up Jin's umbrella. What could she do? Whack him over the head with it? If Matteo had lost control, they were both in danger. Flee, came a voice in her head. No, she told herself. not after Jin had risked his life for her. A shadow fell over her.
Don't make me cut you out of this deal.
Arthi. She was framed against the sun, her hair a halo, Laith behind her. She was dusty and beat, the hard press of her mouth warning them that her patience had worn down to a thread. Flick opened her mouth to alert her that Mateo might not be thinking all too clearly. But this was Arthi. She surely knew that much already. The quiet was the sort where Flick could have heard a pin fall. At last, Mateo opened his mouth.
"Oh, how I missed you, darling,"
he said, but there was nothing light about the words. No tease, all bite, an edge that was half warning, half plea. Arthi held her ground. Mateo turned his head toward her, and Flick knew the moment their eyes locked, because it drained the air from the world, cementing them in time. It was an eternity in which her heart felt submerged in syrup. Each beat as slow as its drip. Each blink of her eyes as if she were underwater. At last, Mateo released Jin's bloody shirt. Jin fell back against the porch, heaving breath after breath, while Mateo's throat worked in a series of calming swallows. Jin, who had been running on anger and nothing else, crawled to the wall. Arthi looked at the scene like she wanted to set fire to them all. She didn't seem to care that Jin was bleeding on Mateo Andoni's porch.
"He lied,"
Jin gritted out, dropping his head back against the bricks.
"No, he didn't," Arthi said with barely restrained calm.
"Andoni, get out of my sight and find someone else to drink."
"With pleasure,"
Mateo said almost gratefully. She looked at Jin.
"If you had paid attention, you wouldn't be making an embarrassment of yourself right now."
"What do you mean?"
Flick wasn't fond of the warble in her voice, but Mateo was only straightening his sleeves and yawning. Not a fang in sight now.
"The bank closes at 7 bells every day."
Laith stepped to Arthi's side, and they almost looked like allies then.
"No, not allies. Equals."
She was either beginning to trust him or beginning to learn her way around him. Knowing what Flick did about Arthi, it was likely the latter.
"Except when it's closed,"
Laith said. "It's a holiday."
19. Arthi. Arthi opened the cabinet by her desk later that evening and swished her decanter. The murky coconut water sloshed forlornly around the glass. Each rotation conjured Mateo's fangs and Jin's bloody body. Each splash summoned the memory of Laith's hand gripping hers. A snip drew her attention to an armchair on the other side of the room, where Jin had finished stitching himself up. He set the pair of bloody scissors beside a growing pile of candy wrappers that verified his sour mood. Arthi moved the Ethereum marker she'd filched today like a pawn across a chessboard before forcing herself to stop.
"You're fiddling," Jin was watching her.
"And?"
she asked. His pale, blood-drained face was still seared behind her eyelids.
"You don't fiddle."
"Go on, tell me again what a fool I was for not remembering today's a holiday when I can barely find an hour to sleep anymore, and the roof above my head is in danger of being blown to smithereens. My eye won't quit twitching, and you're..."
"Not remembering it's a holiday isn't the problem, Jin."
She calmly cut him off. She had known it was a holiday when he set off to do the job today. She thought he'd known too.
"We've done plenty of jobs in full houses. We don't get caught."
He looked away. "And we're lucky the sister you ran into isn't the Ethereum's doorkeeper, or our entire plan would be shot, and it's far too late to come up with a new one." He slumped back with a growl. It was the same way Mateo had growled when his fangs were inches away from Jin's throat. Arthi clenched her jaw.
"Nor do we throw ourselves at a vampire while bleeding all over his porch."
Jin's eyes flashed.
Like you don't act with the same level of recklessness I merely adopted for a half hour.
Arthi shot to her feet.
I know I won't turn up dead. You think Matteo would have stopped with a kiss on your cheek?
Jin rose too.
I could have... No!
She whirled on him. She knew her emotions were spelled across her face by the stricken look on his.
You could have died, Jin. You could have died.
The fight broke out of her, cracking her voice to a whisper.
And one day, I won't be there to stop it.
He looked away. In the lamplight, the skin of his arm shone like leather, wrinkled and glossy. He'd shaken Death's hand more than once, felt the skin of its scythe. Arthi had stepped between them every time, before the fire could consume him, before a bullet could claim him. In the silence, Arthi closed herself back up again and circled to her desk. The chair sighed softly.
This, Arthi started to say.
Jin stopped her, peering over the gunmetal rim of his teacup.
And no, this has nothing to do with Flick.
Never said it did. Arthi returned her scrutiny to the marker, though she'd thought exactly that.
She's not my type.
Jin sounded adorably embarrassed. The Jin Casimir, expert flirt and charmer of anything that moved, made bashful by a girl.
Mm-hmm, Arthi said, indulging him. She can't dress inconspicuously to save her life.
And he couldn't lie about his true feelings to save his. Arthi nodded.
She's green as a tea leaf is what she is.
He made a displeased sound.
Ah. So only he was allowed to make up reasons to whine about her.
She's a toff through and through, he continued.
What kind of name is Felicity, anyway?
The kind you shortened to Flick. Arthi snapped the light away and made a note. She knew he didn't believe a word of what he was saying. Don't go with her to the foundry.
What? Why?
He asked, fully concerned now. Because a foundry was full of what he feared. Fire and heat and smoke in a dark, yawning chasm.
Because, she said instead, you have enough to do before the festival. We're cutting it close as it is.
The door flung open on his protest, and Chester squeezed through, all red-faced and out of breath.
Boss, I told them not to let him in. It was Rennie, that bugger,
Chester exclaimed, baring his teeth like a kitten playing lion, as Matteo stepped in after him, cool and amused, and not a vein of violence on display.
You couldn't pay, you shouldn't drink.
Arthi scrunched her mouth to the side as he parroted her usual words.
It's quite all right, Chester, she said.
Flick stepped in behind him, followed by Laith, with a glance in her direction that sent a zap down her spine. His kitten dashed to the windowsill, where the moonlight bathed her fur in iridescence beneath the blue and black star-peppered sky.
But,
Chester's brow notched with that trio of lines everyone jested him about.
Seems your boss has taken a liking to me, Matteo said with pride.
Chester tilted his head, considering him with fresh understanding on his way out.
Boss likes anyone with secrets.
Arthi almost laughed at Matteo's pout.
He isn't wrong.
Flick snorted and clasped her hands to her mouth in horror at the sound. She then proceeded to stare at the ground like it was the most riveting thing in existence, brightening Jin up considerably.
Did you get the marker? Matteo asked, then frowned. Your jacket's torn. Are you all right?
It was a tiny detail to notice, but Arthi wasn't accustomed to anyone being so attentive to her, so caring.
Perhaps you should stop looking,
Laith said, shifting closer to her.
Someone's getting a little possessive,
Jin whispered in her ear. She belonged to no one, she wanted to say, but a little thrill ran through her, and she couldn't decide if it was from Matteo's attention or Laith speaking out on her behalf. Matteo didn't reply with his usual quip.
He stepped to the window and ran his fingers down the kitten's back, blowing fluff off his fingers with a frown.
Jin, I apologize for earlier.
Arthi was surprised by the apology, and it made her respect for him grow. Jin tipped his head to the side.
An eye to you.
Though calling someone a liar isn't nearly as bad as drinking someone dry, Flick pointed out, anger dipping into her brow.
No, sweet, it is not.
Mateo let out an embarrassed laugh. He turned to her and bowed.
I deeply regret nearly drinking from Jin.
And yes, Arthi said, we did get Lambard's marker, but it's expired, and we don't have time to find another, so Jin will need to go in as a blood companion after all.
As you originally intended, Mateo said. There is hope.
Arthi narrowed her eyes at him. What's wrong? Mateo looked surprised she'd noticed something was amiss.
There's been another disappearance.
Was it someone you knew? Flick asked, concern quickly overtaking her anger. A siren wailed in the distance, shouts echoing through the night, and Mateo shook his head. The unspoken questions hung in the air. Who would be next? And why were vampires being targeted at all? Arthi hated not knowing, but they couldn't afford any distractions. She led them to the room connected to her office, once a hidden bedchamber when this was the curio. Back then it was governed by a man with a fat moustache and equally fat greed. Now it belonged to a small girl with an equally small heart, as Jin liked to tease. Jin switched on the lights, illuminating his work tables on one wall, the collection of secrets and records hidden behind the shelves along the other that Flick turned a keen eye toward, and a table at its centre with Mateo's sketches of the Aetherium. Chester followed them in, toting a tray with goodies and a tea set that clinked with his steps. The woody, earthy scent of the warm tea enveloped the room, and Arthi breathed deep. She had missed it.
Not now, Chester. We're busy, she said.
Jin asked for him, he said with a frown. Rennie brewed it just now. Arthi pulled out the chair beside Flick and looked to Jin for an explanation. He shrugged.
The pastries are going to be thrown out anyway.
Thrown out? Chester asked. I bought these for you.
I think you should leave now, little man, Jin said, mock sternly. Besides, you know I can't think on an empty stomach.
Mateo gave him a look.
I hate to say it, old boy, but it's always empty.
Because it's never not pastry o'clock, Jin said, and then glanced at the others.
But don't act like I'm ordering them. Go on. Anyone else care for a spot of tea?
It has been an age since I had a Bakewell tart, Mateo said wistfully, eyeing the tart with its candied cherry that looked like a drop of blood atop white icing. Ground almonds, rich butter, cherry jam. He punctuated his list with a dreamy sigh.
Have one then, Arthi said. Mateo balked.
And taste ash. Losing the ability to taste food is a curse, really. Jin looked mournful on his behalf. Flick leaned over and examined the platter of pastries and biscuits. There was grease on her fingers from rifling through her tools. The girl was becoming more and more unladylike by the minute. Arthi had to admit that she was pleased.
I'll take a bourbon biscuit, please, Flick said. And tea, of course.
Saint? Arthi asked, gesturing to the tray.
Some of us like being nimble, Laith said, shaking his head.
He was fiddling with his gauntlet blade. She didn't like how closely he was watching her.
Some of us are lucky enough to eat what we want and be nimble, Jin said, sipping his tea. I'm sorry you're not so fortunate.